Hey everyone, welcome back to Morning Update. So a couple things have happened, but nothing too crazy. We're gonna do our regular daily thing where we start with our weekly thing where we start with the stock market. We did not make a prediction last time, John. I don't think we remembered to make predictions.
Yeah, I kind of predicted it would. It mentally, I predicted the stock market would stay more stable, and it kind of did. It hardly moved at all today, but it has gotten a little bit better.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. I'm just looking at my Apple, like the Apple app that shows stocks. The Dow Jones is at 40,000, which that's up 1,000 from last week, so that's actually pretty good. But the biggest mover, and I saw a story about this. I didn't read it, but I saw the headline, so that counts for something. But
Nice.
NASDAQ grew by nearly 2,000 points, which is 6.5%, and that's actually incredible. I think that might be one of the first few times where it has consistently overperformed compared to the Dow.
Wow.
And the S&P did as well, and that I think also is one of the first few times it's done that.
So it's still not a full recovery to where it was in February, but
Right.
The market has bounced back.
Right. Yeah, that is what it looks like, which is good. This isn't just random stuff out of the blue, though. The reason stocks are, a little bit iffy right now is on the Dow, there was a ton of earnings calls. This probably is why everything outperformed by the Dow last week. But there were a ton of earnings calls, and what the consistent thing I was hearing on all of this type of stuff is we have to rip up our earnings forecast for the entire year because tariffs are adding a bit of, they're adding a change. But there's something a
Yeah.
bit deeper than that. Like, it's not just like, okay, these tariffs are causing things. Now we're going to have lower profits this year, but we can fix them next year. It's a bit different because it's these tariffs are causing these things, but we also are hearing rumors that there's going to be these exemptions and that there's going to be these trade deals, but none of that has happened yet. So there's a little bit of uncertainty there as well. So it's actually very hard for them to make revised earnings forecasts. So that's a little bit of the uncertainty. But the fact that it does appear that the trade war is going to begin winding down does seem to have caused the Dow to still go up as well as the other indexes.
And if the trade war was still going on, which it seems like both sides have come to some sort of muted agreement that it's going to de-escalate, but if it was still going on, that uncertainty could be a good thing because it's kind of pushing businesses to divest from more uncertain areas overseas and invest in America. But
Right.
now all that uncertainty is doing is making people withhold their investments, or make investments that actually don't pan out. The markets don't want uncertainty.
Right. Yeah, uncertainty is the enemy of economic growth. This is a rant, well, not super random, but a pretty big example of what uncertainty can do. So China is actually, I believe, the second biggest customer for Boeing, second to American companies like the, United Airlines and your typical airline companies. China's state-owned companies are the second biggest customers, and China has banned the purchase of new Boeing jets. So all of that customer potential goes to China's state-owned manufacturers. I can't remember what it's called, but they have some weird company similar to Boeing. It's basically Boeing with a Chinese name. And yeah, all of that business goes to them. So Boeing has to find a new customer to buy all these jets. And it does look like India is a pretty big customer. They're an emerging market, and that means that they're developing their infrastructure, including airports. Their people are going to start beginning international travel soon, so their airline industry is going to boom soon. So India is a pretty promising one, but still, they have to find a new customer for that. And it's interesting because I'm mentioning Boeing specifically because of their role in the government and the military. They have a
Yeah.
huge role in the upcoming fighter jet.
And Boeing is one of the largest, like, heavy manufacturing companies in the US.
Right.
It's not what we want to be losing.
Exactly. And if people start losing jobs when they're told that tariffs will bring them jobs, that's kind of going to look pretty bad on the president and the administration.
100%.
So yeah, that's a little bit of like a bird's eye view of, the direction the stock market went. It's just pretty good. I'm very happy with it. There was quite a bit that was wiped away from it when the tariffs were announced, and there's going to have to be a lot more development with it, but it's heading in the right direction. Do sort of mention how it's winding down a little bit, because we mentioned that trade war is winding down, so I suppose we should get into it a bit. So Trump has talked about, and I believe, was it, do you know if, I'm not sure if you heard about this or not, but Scott Bessent talked about the trade war with China, right?
No, I didn't hear about that.
Okay. I think there were two people. It was like Trump and some other member of his administration, which might be the first time in recent history that they didn't contradict each other, because they seem to do that sometimes. But either ways, him and some other member of his admin talked about how the current trade war with China is unsustainable. Trump said it, and then, the normal Trump way, it's like, well, we're gonna have a deal. It's gonna be a good deal. We're gonna go easy on them, the Trump way. And I think it was Scott Bessent talked about it, and sort of like, yeah, we're pretty confident they're going to make this deal with us. There's a pretty good deal coming up, and this is an unsustainable trade war with China that we cannot continue for too long. So that'll be interesting. The one downside to that is no side has reached out. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
which is a little bit disappointing to have it be like, yeah, the US can only go a month and a half before it decides, yeah, we absolutely can't sustain not trading with a country. I think it really does show how strong our alliance is, and that can be a very large weakness.
Right. I think I heard this some, I don't remember where I heard this. I don't have a source, so if you don't want to believe it, that's totally fine. But what I heard is that China is never the first country to reach out for any reason ever. Which is interesting. Like, the last time they reached out to any country for the, like, to initiate something was when they reached out to the United States. I think it was after 9/11.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Just to say we didn't do it.
Yeah, something like that. To say we didn't do it or give us condolences. I don't know, but it was something like that. And I don't know if that story is true or not, but if it's not true, that story was made up on the fact that China has this legacy of never reaching out first, which is a bit scary to think about, because Trump has an ego where he doesn't want to reach out first either.
It looks like from their moves, even if they haven't ex specifically made a deal yet, the fact that they're putting exceptions on the US parts that they really want, just like how we're putting exceptions on Chinese goods that we really want, is a sign both sides are trying to back off. They're
Yeah.
both taking the teeth out of their own policies.
Yeah. So they're like keeping like the I'm not going to you first and you're not going to me first, but we'll just like do these tiny little things back and forth.
Yeah, that seems
Yeah.
to be what's happening.
Yeah, that's still de-escalation, so that's still pretty good. I'm gonna be honest, I was kind of excited for this tariff war when it first started. Because I'm a young person, I don't actually know what the effects of tariffs are. I mean, I guess I do now, but I didn't before. And so I like learning things by example. And the tariff war was quite the example.
Yeah. I think we'd have to have it go on longer to get a good sample, but
Right.
there was definitely something to be learned.
Yeah. And if anything, we now understand the immediate effects and like the backlash that you should expect. We don't quite understand the long-term effects though. So we'll see. Maybe this will be excellent for the country if we continue. Maybe it won't be.
Right now it doesn't look like one of the scariest numbers is seeing that the GDP growth forecast went from close to 3%, 2.7%, to 1.7%, which is concerning.
Right. Yeah, that is pretty concerning. I don't think it's that bad though.
No.
No. So, do you remember earlier in the year, I think it was like Atlanta Fed or something, and they were predicting that there'd be a recession before tariffs were even discussed?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, tariffs have been discussed and they're in place and they're in effect, and the most prominent economic organizations in the country are still predicting economic growth.
So the US economy is more resilient than we're giving it credit for.
That's what I think, yeah.
That's fair. I mean, if you look at recent history, it has shown the ability to bounce back very quickly.
Yeah, and we sort of have like this money type mindset where if we get fired from our job or we get, fewer hours, we always try to find something to replace it, but that something we replace it with is usually in the business world or economic world. So
Yeah,
that
it's a
replaces it.
pretty good growth mindset.
Right. That won't be able to, that wouldn't work if we had this massive recession or depression or whatever, but yeah, it looks like it's pretty resilient. I would argue that our growth is probably going to be closer to 2.2, but I'm not an economist, so I'm probably wrong.
But still, the fact that the trade war hasn't necessarily panned out, and a lot of it seems just very confusing, damaging to the markets, and that even if, as we've said before, job growth and economic growth isn't too bad, sentiments on the economy are not as good as people would hope it to be. That is one of the main reasons why this new poll came out, I think it was today or yesterday, from Time Siena, which is pretty good, basically saying that the honeymoon's over for Trump. And more than that, it seems like his approval rating has basically sunk back down to what it normally was. That there was this period of time right after the election where, an approval rating of 52%, which is crazy. And it's just steadily went down to 49% in February, 48% in March, and then slipping even farther to 46%, and now finally 44% at the end of April.
Yeah. It's the end of his, like you said, the end of his honeymoon period. What do you you know more about this poll than I do. So like what's your take on, why exactly? Like you mentioned economic factors, like do you
Yeah.
think that's the only one or?
I think it's just looking at the partisan breakdown, how it's still basically every Democrat supports or opposes Trump, and basically every Republican supports Trump.
Yeah.
Pretty much all of this can be explained by independents turning away, that especially when compared to Kamala Harris, people liked Trump more, or they disliked Harris that much, and then they came to their own conclusions from there. They might even have given Trump the benefit of the doubt, but after this chaos, and like, even if there's a lot of red meat for Republicans, it's not exactly a unifying message. I think independents are checking out. 75% of independents, according to this survey, say that the country is on the wrong track.
Yeah, I agree that independents are probably like the biggest factor. That's really interesting though. We have a lot of time before the next election. It's like a year and a half yet, but I'm gonna make a prediction, and it's premature, so I'm probably wrong, but I think that Republicans are probably going to get crushed They're going to lose the House, and they
No.
might get tied in the Senate.
Yeah, I mean, with how bad the Senate looks for Democrats right now, Republicans would really have to mess up. Not that that's a thing that they never do, but you'd have to really mess up to lose the Senate.
Yeah, like this is the what it looks like right now is this is the worst case polling scenario outside of a massive mess up. So I don't see them losing the Senate, but yeah, you're right. It's pretty crazy. I mean, I don't remember 2018 because I wasn't really old enough to pay attention to that quite yet, but from what I've heard, it was like a blue wave. Like Democrats took the House away from Republicans by a solid margin. They threatened the Senate. It's gonna be like that.
Yeah, something like that,
Yeah.
which you can generally expect to happen in midterms. It just that midterms will go against the party in power, but
Right.
we just don't know how big it's going to be.
Right. Here's the thing, though. If Democrats do take the House, how many impeachments do you think they're going to try?
I'm hoping that they have enough of a sour taste in their mouth from what they did before that they find a more productive use of their time. I'm hoping, because I don't want to have the headache of following that in the news for a whole year.
This might be the one time where I kind of hope they just look and stare at their stock market stuff. And focus on trading stocks instead of
And I
not.
mean, let's say they get into power and they pursue an impeachment and they manage to succeed this time, get the right groups in order. Okay, you just put a what? By that time, he'll be like 79, 80-year-old in prison. And by all accounts, he might be, unless the Democrats can produce a great candidate, he might be succeeded by Vance.
Yeah, he will be succeeded by Vance. You know, he'll. Yeah.
But even in the next election,
Oh,
like,
like that? Yeah.
yeah.
I was a little confused. I was like, what do you mean? Yeah. yeah, that I don't think that's a good idea. Obviously, they don't think they're gonna win. If they do.
Because if you go into the data, you like, tr I think Trump's going back down to just as unpopular as he was before, where he's always going to be struggling to, like, be a unifying figure. But if you
Right.
go to the basics of, like, do you identify as a Republican or a Democrat? It's the same thing that it's kind of been for most of my life of like 48, 52, 48% Republican, 52% Democrat. If you force everyone to answer, there's going to be a lot of independents and people in the gray area.
Right. I think that is changing, though. I mean, it's not affecting Trump's popularity, but I think that is changing because last time I've been looking at this stuff, it looks as if Republicans are gaining the majority of registered, they're gaining like a majority over Democrats in key swing states.
Yeah. I mean,
But that could just be because Democrats switched to independents.
and just looking at the data broken down by age, you would expect that, as it's just kind of seemed to be in American politics, that younger people are always going to lean more liberal, right?
Right.
But it is. From the data I'm seeing, 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds are kind of on the same ground politically right now. That there doesn't seem to be much more slippage there. So it's not like Republicans are going to be winning young people, at least right now, but they're not doing any worse than they were before.
Yeah. That's really interesting because like 4 years ago or 5 years ago when Biden was getting elected and all the young people were for Biden, I never thought that they would like switch.
I mean,
Maybe they didn't switch and they just got older.
I never really saw the grassroots support for Biden. Like, not that I was super active in 2020. I didn't see it.
I might have been a little bit more online then. I don't know. Maybe what I was seeing wasn't reality, but that's what I saw on Twitter.
It really is unfortunate, though, that like the two big things in the news right now is on economics and kind of foreign policy slash immigration, which those two things should be Trump's strongest areas. But through a mixture of, well, I don't even think we should blame a bad media environment because that should just be a given. Like that's baked into the cake. I think there are just unforced errors here. Even with the El Salvador case, where it's like we've talked about it before, it's not the worst thing, but like there's a better way to put forward your vision on immigration and what a hard line looks like.
Yeah, there is. And I think I'm going to be honest with you. I think if people understood the circumstances surrounding the guy who was supposedly from Maryland, who got deported to El Salvador, and if people actually took the time to understand the circumstances around all of these news stories, I think Trump would probably still be popular. But because Trump doesn't seem to care what the media say about him and how he changes the perception, he just cares that they talk about him. The perception of him is negative.
And negative news still affects some people.
Right. Yeah. Negative. It's kind of, yeah, even though everyone seems to understand that the news companies and media companies just trying to make stuff up, sort of, will take something that happened and then add some random stuff to it or make something up or say something that's not true about it, they still, for some reason, believe it when they see it.
All right. Well, I haven't heard that much about this most recent event with the judge that got arrested.
Oh
Like,
yeah.
what's the way that you explain that?
Okay, so I needed a little bit of a rundown myself because I was so confused when I heard about it. So there's this, I'm gonna give you what I heard is that Donald Trump no, well, I guess Pam Bondi in cooperation with the FBI, so whoever, I forgot his name, Kash Patel, arrested this judge from Milwaukee County for obstructing an ICE, I guess, arrest, an ICE arrest. The way I heard it when I saw the headline was that they arrested a judge because of basically the way she ruled on immigration things, which is not true. What happened? So the illegal immigrant they're going after, his name is Flores Ruiz, however you say that. I'm sorry if I said it wrong. He was convicted of, I can't remember, some crime. And Trump is going after the illegal immigrants who committed more than one crime, right? They entered the country and they probably stole something or whatever. And so they're going after him. And Flores Ruiz is supposed to be at a hearing eventually. No, he was at a hearing at this Milwaukee County courthouse. And the hearing was a little unrelated to his own case, but he was at the hearing anyway, him and his lawyer. And so ICE got an administrative warrant so that they could arrest him on the grounds. And so they go to the courthouse in Milwaukee County to arrest him. And the judge comes out to meet them because you shouldn't just run into a courtroom hearing in the middle of the hearing. You should talk to the judge so that you don't disrupt anything. So the judge comes out and talks to them, and she's like, "Well, you can't come in here with an administrative warrant. You need a different kind of warrant," which I don't believe is true. That's just a flat out lie. And then she goes back and, well, she says to them that she needs to go talk to her chief judge, which I don't know the circumstances around that, but she has a chief judge. And she goes back into the courtroom. She leads Flores Royce, allegedly leads Flores Royce and his lawyer out of the courtroom through a private hallway. And that is supposedly how she obstructed justice.
That is a lot worse than. And I just looked it up. He has three counts of domestic abuse, including strangulation.
Okay. Yeah. This is not the person you want to be obstructing justice for. This person should not be walking around free on the streets just because he walked in here illegally. This doesn't give him any extra rights. I'm gonna get a little bit passionate about this because it's a little bit annoying. I do not care if you want to come to this country. You got to go through the process. And the process is hard. I agree. And maybe we should make some changes. Maybe. But that doesn't matter because right now we haven't made those changes. So if you want to come here, you need to obey those hard processes. You need to go through the door, not over the wall. If you go through the door, this country is wonderful to you. And this person went over the wall, the metaphorical wall, and then proceeded to break rules that every single American citizen has to follow on a day-to-day basis. And even if they weren't laws, any moral person who has any sense of reason in their head will obey those rules. And this person, Flores Royce, didn't. He should not be walking around on the streets. I don't care if he's here illegally or not.
And it makes sense to go after people that had committed crimes, more crimes than just entering illegally, first. And as from what I've seen, there's very much reluctance to deport people that have been like in the US for 20 years and paying taxes. That doesn't even seem to be something that's happening. So there's very much a spectrum on illegal immigrants in the US right now.
Right. It seems like the people who obey every single law who are here, they're just here illegally. But other than that, they obey every single law and they maybe pay taxes. I guess we might not be able to prove that, but maybe they do. As far as we know, next to zero of those have been deported. It's just people who break laws while they're here,
Yeah.
which I think is a common sense issue. You shouldn't be breaking laws and just, oh, well, you're here illegally, so we
Yes.
can't touch you.
And it's, I think it's something that makes a lot more sense to Republicans. Democrats are not going to look at this and take a more reasoned approach. They're just going to say, yeah, this is the end of democracy. Judges are being arrested in the streets.
Yeah, they're already saying that. This is, I don't know. It's normal. Every single time something bad happens, I just tell myself it's normal politics. They're gonna twist it anyway. And then when they do twist it, I just get upset because even though I tell myself they're gonna twist it, it's just still kind of dirty to just twist things and lie about it. But oh well,
Oh,
politics will
Phil.
do that. Moving a little bit on from the passionate topic of Flores Ruiz. I still don't know how to say his name.
Ruiz looks correct.
Ruiz, okay. I thought I learned like the Spanish alphabet in like 5th grade, but apparently not, because whenever I try pronouncing their names, I say I'm wrong or something, so I guess I don't know it well enough. So moving on from domestic policy to hopefully a less passionate topic of foreign policy. We have this massive $1 trillion hole in our trade right now, and that's called China. So we're not really doing anything like any trade almost at all with them right now because of the tariff war. So there's an interesting nation that I'm very excited about and a little bit nervous about at the same time is sort of. They're sort of positioning themselves, and we are positioning them to replace China. And that's India. Which, what are your immediate thoughts on that?
I think it has a lot of potential. It has the same human resources as China, just in terms of a massive population. It's less of a threat to us on the world stage. So if you want to not be feeding your main enemy, it would make sense.
Right.
My main reservation would be just in terms of reputation and just the stereotypes that I've gleaned from, I don't know, reading and the internet. Even if they're not our friends, the Chinese have a reputation for being taskmasters that really deliver on their products. Like, maybe not deliver high quality things, but they will do the thing. I don't know how much you can trust like Indian manufacturers to fulfill their contracts. Not
Right.
that I'm an expert on it. I just don't know if they have the same reputation and ethic as China.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Back in, when was it, when Japan started becoming a manufacturing powerhouse, their goods sort of had like the same reputation that Indian goods have right now. You know, they exist, but they're not high quality. They didn't have the best reputation, basically. And they fixed that. You know, Japanese goods are considered one of the most high quality, technologically advanced goods in the world. China had the same issue when they started becoming the factory of the world. They had, you know, unreliable products. It was super cheap. They'd fall apart easily, you know, things like that. And they're fixing that as well. So I think it's sort of like every single nation, as they sort of become from an agrarian society to an industrial society, they sort of have that reputation. But then, you know, give it a couple years or maybe 5, 10 years, but and that reputation will be gone.
So really, we're just looking, we just kind of need to give them a chance. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I hope so. They could, you know, the government could probably mess that up if their government is weird, but yeah.
I mean, they are going through, this is a little bit off topic, but they are going through that whole dispute with Pakistan, where there is actually some shots fired on the border today.
Really?
Yeah.
I heard
I mean,
about the dispute. I didn't hear about the shots fired.
there hasn't been any news since then, so there's no reason to believe it's escalated further, but there were shots fired on the border.
Interesting.
And they're definitely not friends. I think both of them revoked visas from the other country, and India's trying to backtrack on a water deal it made with Pakistan because they kind of share the Indus River.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think it would make sense that they're not actually going to go to war just because I don't think that's a war either of them can win. They're both nuclear powers that aren't going to get a lot of foreign help.
Right. Unless the United States changes its Pakistan policy. Because by the looks of it, we're increasing our military ties with India as well. And, you know, I'm
Where
pretty sure that's just to counter China, but.
but historically, when India was feuding with Pakistan, just from what I saw recently, we would side with Pakistan.
Okay.
I'm just guessing the reason being that Pakistan is the more vulnerable player there. And if we want to prevent a war from starting, we're going to need to back up Pakistan just to present them as a harder top target.
Yeah. Well, I kind of hope that policy changes because I don't have a good opinion of Pakistan.
Me
And
neither.
it's, yeah, it's not
Yeah.
because they're a majority Muslim country. It's because they didn't do too well with us when we tried killing Osama bin Laden. But.
No, I think they've been a major global source of terror at from what I know. And with over the summer, the whole thing about the migrant gangs in Great Britain, pretty much all of the worst offenders were from Pakistan.
Huh. Yeah. That makes my opinion of them like way worse. I didn't know that. So I hope that whatever is happening between India and Pakistan is resolved peacefully, but if it's not, I hope we take India's side. Or just like refuse to comment on it.
Would be like there is the civil war in Myanmar, but I don't think there has been a modern era total war in South Asia. Like
Yeah.
besides Vietnam. I'm talking about like in the past 50 years.
Right. Yeah, like after the communist revolution, there really hasn't been. Vietnam, Cambodia, and that was like the last ones.
So it's an interesting thought
For a
and off
region that you
topic.
would think is like super deadly, that's surprisingly few.
It's like a half the world's population is in Asia below Russia.
Right. Yeah. And, every single nation in Southeast Asia seems to have claims on each other, too.
Yeah.
Like, there's disputes between the Vietnam and Chinese border, the Indian Chinese border, the Filipino Chinese border, Taiwan, obviously, Japanese islands versus Chinese island. You know what? I take that back. I think it's just disputes between every country and China.
I did hear something about how China is in active disputes with pretty much every single one of its neighbors, including Bhutan, which kind of
Huh.
sad, beefing with a country that small.
Yeah. Well, I guess if they have to beat on the small people, then that just shows they're kind of not good people to do trade with.
So in terms of arming our potential allies, we can sell them the F-35.
Right.
That's the big thing.
Yeah, the F-35. I listened to J.D. Vance's speech that he gave while he was in India after he met with Prime Minister Modi. And it sounded like he didn't give specifics because, he's not the president. But he did mention the F-35 because Trump mentioned it earlier. He said that we're going to increase cooperation between oil. India doesn't have very much oil, but we do. So we want them to buy from us instead of Russia, basically, or instead of the Middle East.
Because they're buying a lot from Russia right now.
Yes, they are. Yeah. They're sort of keeping Russia's industry afloat. But I think if we sell them our military equipment, like the F-35 and probably more than that, like small arms and tanks and the best that we have, they'll probably be okay with buying our oil too.
As long as we can provide a good price, which I think we can.
Yeah. And we're expanding production in the Gulf of America, so.
You gotta name drop it.
Yeah, I do have to name drop it. I'm sorry.
Such a beautiful name. You know that right there made the whole tariff war worth it.
Exactly. You know what? I'll vote for Trump again if he's gonna name something else America. Call Canada like northern wait. Yeah, Northern United States.
Northern America.
Yeah, Northern America.
Be hilarious.
Do you think Google and Apple would actually change that on their maps?
No.
Oh man.
I mean,
Northern
maybe
America.
if it was like after some old president like Monrovia, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, but don't they have that in Liberia?
They do.
Yeah. Can't repeat it.
The state of Jefferson. That's been proposed.
Oh yeah. Wasn't that like that was like a mix of like Tennessee and Carolina, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. So
I'm
just
not
change.
against it.
Yeah, I'm not either. State of Jefferson. Oh yeah, Tennessee? No, Canada. I see I lost my spot now. That's okay. We were talking about India, weren't we? India.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the potential. I think we've covered them pretty well. We just have to keep an eye on them because, they do have ties with Russia still. And I know we're changing our Russian policy, but we should keep an eye on them, you know.
And I do think beyond just military and economic interests, in terms of both humanitarian and environmental interests, there's a lot of very great need in India. It's a very just kind of poor country overall. And the data has shown lifting people out of poverty, giving them opportunities beyond just day-to-day subsistence living is one of the best guarantees against pollution and environmental degradation. So, like, if we
Right.
have a big problem with how, like, I think two of the highest polluting rivers in the world are coming out of India. One way that we can decrease that is by forming a trade network with India that can help them go through their own development process.
Right. So basically, help them develop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, India has been a poor country for a long time. I don't see any reason why we can't help them develop. It'll be beneficial for both of us.
It'd be beneficial for the administration right now to at least get a diplomatic win under its belt.
Right. There's a couple things that we said we'd give updates to last week that we haven't touched on yet. So Ukraine, there really isn't an actual update. It's still that tit for tat, like the sign this deal, it has mineral stuff in it, and then they don't sign the deal. Russia proposed an Easter ceasefire. That didn't happen. And then I guess there's a little bit of an advancement. I think it was the Trump administration was talking with Ukraine about peace talks. They have like two different teams. One team talks to Ukraine, one team talks to Russia. They're talking with Ukraine and they're really trying to get both to the table. And they think they're getting somewhere. And then Russia fires missiles into a Ukrainian city. And Trump didn't like that. He actually posted something on Truth Social that says, "Putin, stop!" exclamation mark, all caps. So,
Which is one of the first times he's just come out and done that,
Yeah.
and directly calling for, yeah, cessation of hostilities. Maybe that's the word for it.
Right. I don't know what Trump's going to do about it if he doesn't stop. He hasn't really articulated that, but I'm glad he's getting somewhere because it is pretty clear Russia is the aggressor and Russia is definitely not a fan of peace.
Well, it looks like Steve Witkoff, our envoy in Russia, has just returned from a meeting, and it might have been a productive one.
Okay. So maybe next week we'll have a positive update on this.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
This hopefully this war ends before I graduate.
For real. Hopefully it ends before I graduate.
Oh man, it would be hell on earth if it, like, yeah. I mean, it
Yeah.
already is. There's brutal trench fighting.
Yeah, it's like World War II style. It's pretty bad.
Well, yeah, we'll see what that looks like next week.
Right. So it looks like I have one small story I have to get to before we get to a more fun, less politically heavy story. And that's with colleges and Donald Trump. So I have no update on the Harvard case. I do have an update on Yale. Yale has not been sued by the Trump administration, as far as I'm aware, but they are selling their endowments.
To who?
All of their private equity. I don't know who they're selling it to, but they're selling it.
That's huge.
Yeah. I've been told that that's usually a bad sign for universities as a whole.
Yeah. Does the university then become like, is it being auctioned off like a private company?
No, not like that. They're not getting purchased. So universities like to set money aside, right?
Yeah.
And so traditionally, what a university would do is they'd buy a bunch of stocks or something like this, and they'd call it good because you can turn that into money really quickly, and it protects you against inflation. What Yale did is they're like, you know what? Real estate and other similar types of investments are more. That, they increase every single year by more than what stocks do. but they're less liquid. But you know, the chances are we're probably not going to need the money immediately. So we're going to invest into these types of less liquid investments.
But
And that
now they're
is,
trying to get liquidity back.
well, they're liquidating. Yeah. Basically, it probably means that they expect to spend a ton of money soon.
So they might be preparing for a fight.
Yeah, sounds like it.
All right. I mean, we'll see. I guess that's another thing to look for in next week. Are they actually going to pick a fight? And if they do, will it actually be a valid one?
Right.
Because I'm
Yeah.
not going to jump to conclusions and say that the universities are automatically in the wrong. But if it's the same thing of like, yes, we have to have Hamas terrorists on campus, then that'll be a kind of dumb play.
They add a lot to the culture there. I don't know if you've had a Gaza taco, but it's very good. I'm making this up, by the way. wait, no. Okay, so do you know the story behind like the Taco Bell number two?
No.
Okay. Yeah, it's a joke, you know. It's like it's
Oh, okay.
yeah.
Yeah.
A
I can
Gaza
imagine.
taco, you know. And anyways.
Gonna blow up the bathroom. Awful.
Yeah. Oh man, I'm
All
sorry if
right.
anyone listening to this is
Yeah.
pro-Palestine. If you are, I don't know why you're listening to this because I don't think
This is not a safe space.
What do you expect when you have two Christians on a podcast? Okay, moving on to another lighter note. I'm a little excited about this. Before we get started, I do need to make this 100% clear. I'm excited about this. This is not a sponsored message. We are not paid to do this. We are not told to do this, but I'm excited
We
about
were
it. So I'm
not paid off by Jeff Bezos.
exactly. We don't have not Zucker Bucks, Jeff Bucks.
Bezos bucks.
We don't have Bezos Bucks. So
But
if they do want to sponsor, just kidding.
it's a really cool car.
It is really cool. I'm gonna start with the downside because it changes everything. It's electric, but you could probably put an engine in it. Setting that aside, there is a car company called Slate, Slate. And if you want to visit their website, you go to slate.auto. And it's really cool. They look cool. They're pretty much retro style. Okay, so you know how most car companies have multiple car models? So, like, you go to Ford's website, you get an Expedition or you can get an Escape or an F-150. Well, Slate was like, okay, we're going to have different models, but they're all going to be the exact same thing. So the base car is literally a base, like the actual base. And you'll understand what I mean in a second here. It's a pickup truck. And when I say base, I mean if you want an SUV, I kid you not, all they do is slap something over the bed and flip the seats up.
And it's really like it's cheap, but it's really small.
Right. And I'm not saying that everyone should go out and buy a Slate, but this concept of like modularity and just having very basic vehicles that you can basically construct on the website, that makes things so much cheaper. I
Which,
love the idea.
from what I've heard, maybe it's given him too much credit, but that's Bezos's business model is. If we give the customers exactly what they want, give them the satisfaction they want, they will pay for it.
Right. Yeah. And you know, there is no more, you can't get any more satisfied than you being able to literally choose exactly what you want. And Slate, as a car company, is about as close to that as you can get.
The big upside is it looks like a cool little truck. It looks like little 1990 Ford Ranger or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's not $40,000.
Exactly. Yeah. A truck that, regular people can afford to buy brand new. I like the idea. Oh my word, these are so cool. I'm sorry. I'm scrolling through the website looking at the pictures. So I'm sorry if you really want to see the photos, but you're listening to this podcast instead.
You're
I
listening
mean,
to a podcast.
yeah. Okay, let me see. I had a really cool one. Okay, so you know that one that's like that has like the skis on top of it and like the stickers on the side on their website.
What?
So like the truck like that has the stickers on the side and that has like the skis on the roof.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It looks kind of like, I don't know if you've seen the show. It looks like the Stranger Things show.
No.
Like the, oh, okay. Oh
Oh,
man.
with the retro look?
Yeah, the retro look and like the van. I mean, it doesn't look exactly like the van, but it reminds me of it.
I
But
mean,
yeah, so
I hope it's a sign of things to come.
I hope so.
It'd be nice to get more little cheap trucks on the market instead of massive 50 grand monstrosities.
For real. And even like those cheap Hyundai ones, like the Santa Cruz, those are still like 30 grand starting price.
Crazy.
I know, it's crazy. The only one way to truly be an American is to buy a truck. That's not true. You don't have to listen to me. Oh man. Okay, I'm gonna get off the website before I get addicted to looking at it.
It is really modular. There's so many different designs.
I know, it's crazy. Oh man, I'm really excited for it. I'm not gonna buy one because they're electric,
It's
but
reminding me a little bit, just some of the designs are giving me Cybertruck
really?
vibes. Like this is a product of Silicon Valley. This is not a product of Detroit.
I mean, yeah, I can see that, although they are based in Michigan, but I can see what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Their engineers took a bit of inspiration, that's for sure. Wow. Okay. So, in the future, look for cars that have an engine in them and not a battery that are cheap.
Until we get a little bit better electric cars.
If I can charge my car in 5 minutes up to 100% and then drive 300 miles, I have no problems with an electric car. But that's not possible yet. So, until then.
Fair enough.
And yeah, I mean, this is a bit off topic, but I don't really see the point of EVs yet. They're more expensive. I guess, they don't pollute, but that's about maybe the only upside. So you can drive
And
them through cool tunnels, but
they drive pretty smoothly. Have a very easy time kind of accelerating and decelerating.
yeah, that's true.
It's
There, yeah.
actually pretty crazy driving. I haven't driven in one very many times, but an electric car, once you let off the gas, it like stops.
Huh, so you don't even like have to hit the brake?
I mean, there's still a use for the brakes, but it doesn't have the same momentum in the engine that an gas car has.
Okay. That's interesting. Wow. So they're pretty cool for like sports cars and things like that.
Yeah, probably better for city driving.
Yeah. Wow. Well, with that in mind, then maybe if I live in a big city and battery tech improves a little bit, maybe it'd
Yeah,
be a
then you
possibility.
don't need to worry about range.
Right. Well, on that note, I believe we've talked about everything that has happened this week. We will meet you again. Well, talk to you or however you podcast. We'll podcast to you again next week. I don't know what the verb is for that, but we'll see you all next week with more updates and more things you need to know, and hopefully another really cool story. Probably not as cool as Slate, though. Slate's pretty cool. Anyways, thank you guys for listening. Adios, and God bless you.